Thank you so much for listening to Urbanistica podcast. I am Mustafa Sharif, an urban planner, and you're more than welcome to join my big journey of exploring the making of smarter and more livable cities. Please don't forget to follow Urbanistica on the different social media platforms, and also let's connect on LinkedIn. Big thanks to Urbanistica podcast partner, AFRI. AFRI is an international engineering and design company providing sustainable solutions in the fields of energy, industry, and infrastructure. Are you ready for a new episode? Let's go for it. Hello, and thank you so much for listening to Urbanistica podcast. Today we have a new story, and we have a great storyteller. I have the pleasure to welcome you, Lenka, to Urbanistica podcast. Hello and welcome.
Hello, thank you so much for having me. I'm really glad to be here.
How are you doing?
Very good.
Yeah.
Now speaking to you, thank you.
Awesome. And how is the weather? I see there is a daily light, so it seems like it's sunny, not like here in Sweden.
Now it's very springy day, like 24 degrees, you know, like not too hot, not too cold. It's
That's just nice. Fine
to sit on the terrace with a friend and have a little cafe or a drink or something. So yeah, it's nice today.
That's awesome. And by the way, in which city are you now?
I'm in Trenčín, Slovakia. Yeah.
That's amazing. Yeah. So
Trenčín is, it's... northwest of Slovakia.
Yeah.
So just so people can imagine, it's close to Czech border, and Slovakia is like in the center of Europe, so to speak. Our neighbors are Czech Republic, Poland, Hungary, Ukraine, Austria.
Yes, you know, yes.
Because very often we get confused with Slovenia, so I just wanted to make that clear from the beginning that there is a difference.
Yeah, now you're already starting to paint the picture for our listeners, like the map and so on. And also, like, for our listeners, maybe you hear there is something wrong with my voice. I just, like, lost my voice. But now I'm recovering, but happy to do this episode. I sound sometimes, maybe I'm going to sound like a chicken, you know, like, quick, quick, doing this, but hopefully it will be fine. So, Lenka, let's start with our story for today.
Yeah.
Like, first, congratulations for like European Capital of Culture 2026.
Thank you. I want you
to take us back and tell us about the background.
Okay, so, it's a story, but it's good that you are talking to me actually, because I was in this crazy story from the day one. So,
nice.
It all happened basically in the beginning of 2020.
Yeah.
And our mayor of our town, Trenčín, he started to call out basically the entire, like, the culture community for these, like, wide meetings to basically ask the question, because it was Slovakia's turn, you know, to actually compete for the title.
Okay.
And ask the question whether we as a city could stand a chance in this competition, and whether we would like to apply, and whether the culture community would feel that we have something to contribute. And just maybe to explain, even a step before, European Capital of Culture is a title that is awarded by the European Commission. And the European Commission or the European Union basically makes like a row of the countries, and then every year, like, different country gets a chance.
Okay.
Usually, actually, it's two countries, so they can twin together and partner up. And then you don't actually compete with the Europe, as it's a very common misconception, but you compete with the city in your own country for the title, right? So it was given by the Commission that in the year 2026, Slovakia will hold the title. Question only was which city.
Okay.
Okay.
I didn't know that. Yeah. Not so many people know about this, that it's like between cities in one country, not like different countries?
Exactly.
Okay.
Yes. So when you, if you would just put European Capital of Culture in Google, and on when you just click on the basic Wikipedia page, you can see how the countries go, like which year, which country is actually competing, you know? So, and it's, you know, also the countries jump in as they join the European Union and so on. So basically you get a chance in average as a country about every 13 years, more or less.
Okay, yeah, okay.
So as Slovakia, we only had one chance to be European Capital of Culture, and that was in 2013. And it was the city of Košice, which is on east of Slovakia. That is our second largest city.
Yeah.
And then 13 years after, 2026, it will be Trenčín.
Nice.
There was a bit of a context.
Yeah.
And so now back to the meetings that the mayor was gathering.
Holding, yeah.
We basically were just, you know, like there were just these initial questions. Are we able to form a team? Do we have particular concept? What do we do? Are we even able to? Do we even want to? And so on. And from these meetings that, you know, there was like 40, 60 people, a small team actually formed after a couple of them, people that said that, wow, let's just give it a try. Like, let's just, you know, let's just see what this is about.
Yeah.
I was one of those people.
Nice.
But also what complicated things that the corona hit right there, you know, like by the beginning of 2020. So for a couple of weeks, everything stopped. We stopped meeting and everything. And the team actually formed only in May 2020, when the restrictions kind of loosened up a little bit and everybody was a little bit less freaked out with the entire situation, because the first months were really scary and really difficult, and it was really unknown, and, you know, nobody knew what's going to happen.
Yeah.
So these were the conditions in which we were competing. First couple people, local people, we just started to, you know, rigorously just study the guidelines, just figure out what we are in, actually, because, you know, we didn't know, like, we had different sorts of experiences also from abroad, from like nationally different backgrounds and so on, and we're just trying to figure it out, so and find some advisors on the way. My background is in visual arts, so I gathered a lot of my crew, you know, from that side.
Yeah.
In particular, the first person I called was my former professor, Ilona Nemet, who is this incredible and very well-known Slovak visual artist. And I just like naturally took over the program, and we were just, you know, we just started to build the bid book, which is basically, it's a book, it's a set of questions that is given by the European Commission, and you need to answer to all of them. And basically it creates this strategic plan, like what you will do with this title, what do you do with the city? And it's very important thing to say that you don't get the title for what already is in the city.
You
get
it
for what you plan, for the strategic plan, for what you can do with the tools of culture to transform the city for the better.
Okay.
And then it's like super important, because then you have a lot of questions from the public, like, oh, we don't have this and we don't have that. How come we get this title and how come we got this prize? But that's not about it. It's about the development. It's about the future transformation.
Okay. So it's a lot to do with what you're going to plan and build and create. It's like not, of course, it's going to be a bit based on the existing infrastructure, but you need to create, right?
Right.
Wow.
That is exactly that, yes.
But you need to create from like 2026 and up, or what is the time frame?
Yes. So the competition actually has two rounds. So in 2020, we managed to go through the first round. It was 8 cities in Slovakia that was applying.
Okay.
And 3 made it to the second round. So in 2021, we were working on the second bid book. And it was a huge boost for us because we were a little bit of an underdog, you know, and we're like, oh, my Lord, like we actually did a good job. So, you know, let's just push it. Let's just go forward. Yeah. And eventually we won by the end of 2021. And then you have this so-called preparatory period, preparatory phase.
Yeah.
That is actually that is for us is from 22 to 25.
Okay.
And meanwhile, you actually do all the prep for the big projects, also for the building infrastructure, because it consists from this like software part, let's call it, and the hardware part, let's call it.
Yeah.
So you build stuff, you prep stuff, you audience develop, you engage communities, you gather the funds, you prep the contracts, you pilot projects and so on. And then the 26 is like the big highlight. And then some sort of legacy should still be present in the city. Yeah. But it goes basically like this. So you shouldn't drop all the way back. No.
Exactly.
But, you know, it cannot have all that intensity of the European title.
Lenka, you say bid, right? Bid book?
Sorry?
You say bid
book.
What is bid?
Yes, like you're bidding.
Ah, okay. Yeah, yeah. Okay. So you need like this presentation material or documentation. Cool.
Yes, and the bid book is actually both, it's available on our website, grandchin2026.eu, if anybody wants to check it out. And yeah, it's basically like this, it has very strict rules how you're supposed to conduct this book. Yeah.
Okay, interesting.
And in first round, it can only have 60 pages, in the second round, 100 pages, you cannot exceed the...
Yeah.
And you still have to answer all of the questions. It needs to be super concise, super smart, super full packed with the good content, with names, with everything.
Interesting. Yeah, we can put the link in the description so people can click and read it. So mm-hmm. tell me, like, the role of Creative Institute of Trenčín.
Yes.
When did it start? And what was the mission of it?
So... you need to have a plan in case you win, right? And so we actually planned Creative Institute in the bid book because there is a question in the chapter of management, how you're going to implement the title. Mm. And it's better to have kind of independent organization, even though you are still using public funds, so it's not as independent.
Yeah.
But at least you have your own ID number and so on. So basically we planned that we would start Creative Institute Trenčín in case we win, and that it would be created and founded by the city of Trenčín and the region of Trenčín. And it started right after, and we followed the plan right after we won in December 2021. Then in January/February 2022, we created the institute. And basically its main mission for now, it's to implement the title. It's to fulfill the bid book and just do the title, basically. And then if we survive 2026 and the city and the region decide that it's still an organization, that it's still, we are a nonprofit, by the way, as to a form, that we should still exist. And basically what we should become if things go well, we are this cultural strategic body, that would be longer, supporting cultural strategy of the city and the region with this international impact and, just carry on with the legacy of the projects that we create due to the title.
Yeah, like just taking care and keep going, keep the culture and the title, like taking care of it.
Of what keep you create. The impact alive.
Yeah. Yeah. But how big is the team?
In this moment, I believe it's about 30 people, and it's supposed to gradually double all the way up to the year of the title.
Right.
And then again, it'll go a little bit down after that.
Yeah, exactly. So and you are the artistic director, which is super cool. Tell us, like, what does it mean, and what is your mission in this team?
Yes. So during the candidacy, I was it was called program manager, and then basically I was I was overlooking and co-creating the entire chapter of culture and artistic content. So it means I was basically in charge of the entire concept of what we are presenting, of the program lines, of the main thoughts, the main missions, the main ideas, and then looking for organizations for the artists who could help us fulfill that mission. And making something, and the role of the artistic director is not only to think of stuff, to think of the projects, but to make it concise and basically zoom out and see all of it in that environment of that city, and to see how it sits, how it helps, whether it's consistent, and you know, scale it up or down, and just have all of these criteria in head at the same time. Basically, that's my role.
But then you need to know about so many different actors, content, like you need to put things together to get the overall picture, no?
That is exactly, like European Capital of Culture is very specific because it needs to be both, not even both, but it needs to be local, national, and international. Yes. You know, work on all of these scales, then it needs to contain all of the genres. It just has so many different things that it needs to be fulfilling and contributing to, that this is basically like this it's constant, like this math in my head, you know, that I'm considering, like, if we lose this, we are losing this.
It's like this equation.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. It's a very complicated equation that constantly is changing, and I need to basically keep track of all of it. And once we founded, or basically once City and the region founded the Creative Institute, the artistic director position was called out in an open call. I had to apply.
Nice.
And like, you know, defend my role, which I defended.
So, that's amazing.
In front of board of trustees. So, and ever since, basically, I'm just trying to do my best to keep it up.
Yeah, I'm happy that you're here. And tell us, you have like both the planning, the content, also managing people, right? The teams, is it in your responsibility?
As well, yes. Yes, now it changes like the amount of people and everything. But yes, I'm basically in charge of the program department, which has project managers and, you know, different kinds of stuff. And basically we divide the projects and overlook the content. And, you know, it's a very, very, very dynamic process. But yes, this goes into it as well.
Nice. I'm very curious now to see like, what are you and your team creating? So would you like to share with us like some of the projects and so on? And please, in details, we love to hear more about what you create.
About what, sorry?
About what you create, like the projects.
Of course. So there are so many. So just so you have an idea, they are not all happening yet, but in the big book, there are in about 60 big projects.
Okay.
So I'm not going to talk about all of them, of course, but basically I can tell you about one of my very favorites, and it's actually one of them that possibly connected us, because there is this flagship project, City Reimagined. That was one of the first ones that I started writing when we were in candidacy phase. And it's a project that is focused on the quality of public space, art in public space, and visual pollution.
Okay.
And placemaking, you know, sort of came into that. So, and that is a good one. I find it as a good example because it contains a great amount of stuff, including, for example, that through this project, we initiated two new strategic documents for the city.
Okay.
And that is the manual for public space and manual for advertisement in public space.
Mm.
And you wouldn't find it as an artistic output, but it's just so incredibly important to, you know, like to the overall strategic approach to how do you feel in the city and what the city values and so on. But through this project, like these strategic moves and then different sort of events explaining these strategic moves to the public and placemaking activities are going to be building up all the way to the 2026 when the cherries on top will be announced, like the new installations in public space, like from different international and national artists, for example, you know. So slowly we are gonna, if I'm gonna to simplify it, first we're gonna clean it up a little bit, and then we're gonna add new beautiful stuff, basically. So yes, since we imagine this, like one of my one of the projects that I have very, very deep connection to. But then, of course, that concerns public space in particular, which connects to the topic of the podcast. But then we have so many others, like what runs very successfully is this project Garage, for example, which gives space to new musicians. It's like this showcase festival that we organize every year now. We actually started already during Canada Space. We do it, we organize it with the biggest festival we have in Slovakia, Pohoda Festival. Maybe you've heard about it. They are really great. And and there is an open call for new bands, and we choose the best of them with the expert committee, and they have concerts, and it's a great, and people come, and you know, it's outdoors, and then we connect them also with the people from the music industry, so it has like a step further, you know. So
And Lenka, how, like you mentioned, we have, you have 60 big projects. And I guess there are also like other smalls, right?
60 is, let's say there is like 60 in general, and some of them are giant, some of them are medium, and some of them are smaller. Yes. Yeah.
And how do you get to the ideas about this project? I mean, I guess it's not only you, right?
Yeah.
Tell me about the process of creating all these ideas.
Okay, so... in that case, we need to go back to the candidacy, right?
Let's go
back. So first, in that small cell of the team, and also like with the people from the city and stuff, like we were thinking, like, what is the main topic? Like, what is the main theme? Like, what are we, how are we special? Because actually, it's really hard to compete with the cities from the same country of the same size with the same, basically almost the same story, you know, but like honestly, because like to the European Commission, the cities are no different, you know, like in a local point of view, you know, like how they are different, but from somebody from Denmark, they like, it's like zero idea, you know, like what is the difference between Trenčín and Nitra, like you know, like it's nothing. Like we are post communist country, the same size, the same problems, you know, the same issues. So we were trying to find like what is the niche, you know, like what is the something that we can bring to the table.
Okay.
And eventually, you know, like after looking what we have so special that we can give, we were coming up short, honestly, you know, because we were only finding problems, so basically, you know, like people were uninteresting, apathetic, and not only in our city, but like it's a problem of a country, I would say. Eventually, we landed with this, what we figure that we actually really, truly, really need, and what we should lead with is like start from the really basics, because it doesn't even matter whatever was here before. We can still count with it, but we need to create a new spark of interest in what was here and what is going to be here in the future and what we have now, because nobody sort of cares about anything. So we didn't want to bring some particular concrete narrative. So what we came up with as the leitmotiv, as the the main slogan was cultivating curiosity. And
nice.
Because the curiosity was like the basically like the first spark of interest, like without curiosity, nothing creative exists. Without curiosity, there's no progress, you know, neither creative, neither scientific. And without curiosity, there is no empathy between people, between nations, and so on. So okay. Basically, and plus it's available to everyone. It's universal across nations. It's universal across group of advantaged or disadvantaged people or different ages and everything. And from there, we just built like, okay, so what it like, we didn't want to bring an exclamation point, but a question mark. And from there, we just, you know, I built the main areas of what in the city we started calling out. I built up this program board of the, you know, like different genres. You know, I had visual arts, I had music, I had the festivals, I had architecture, and I was consulting with them. They were bringing in contacts, they were bringing in artists, and then we were just refining, building projects. Basically, we all together on very different levels, some very intense, some less or medium, but all together we basically confirmed 350 artists from 50 countries.
Wow.
And partners, like all together. So all these sorts of people brought different kind of amount of ideas into the project. Some, as I said, we were working with for months. Some maybe we met once, but overall, it all influenced the mix that actually came out, and I was curating it, so to speak, you know, so it would work out consistently. And it would be aligned with the atmosphere of the city.
Wow. So like you were coordinating and managing, and then for each genre, you had the people working actually with this kind of culture type, right?
Yes. But I was basically, I was managing basically every single project that came into the bid book.
Okay.
Also because I had a lot of advisors, you know, they were advisors, and I called this my widened brain also for the genres that I'm not expert in, because my background is in visual arts. Mm-hmm. So I don't even try to pretend that I'm expert on music or something, you know, so, and I love to work with experts in different fields. I always learn so much. But generally, there had to be someone who is going to make like a consistent picture of it all. You know, so we have different sorts of target groups involved. So all the venues are covered. So all the genres are more or less equal. Wow. You know, so we have different countries involved. It's so much.
It's amazing. I'm so curious now to read actually the bid book. But you told me, is it like a template that you need to follow? Or
it's a set of questions, basically.
Okay.
It's a set of there are chapters, and in those chapters there are questions, and those questions you need to answer, and you need to fit all of those answers with some nice pictures in particular set of pages, which in second round is 100. And those questions you cannot change. Those are the set questions, and you need to deal with them, you know, like the best you can.
Exactly. And Lenka, tell me, why it's like getting this title? Why it's like a so big deal for the city?
Well, it is accelerator of everything, basically, because the title of European Capital of Culture, it started in 1985. It was the first year. And Greek Minister of Culture, Melina Mercouri, started this tradition. And at first it was more about the celebration of culture in general, of celebration of different traditions that different nations have. And it was more like to reach the cohesion of European nations and celebrate each other's culture.
Yeah.
So everybody would have a space. Eventually, like, you know, as the project developed, now in our time, it's more about this strategic transformation of the cities by tools of culture. Also, the cities that do get the title now are usually smaller. So we are not we are not much of an exception necessarily. Yes, we are a very small town, but it's not such a great deal that such a small town like us got it, because the lot of the big towns already made the round.
Yeah.
You know, like yeah. in the past, right? So now it's sort of like our turn, you know, quote unquote.
Yeah.
And it's this help and accelerator to the smaller cities to basically reach some sort of transformation quicker.
Yeah.
Because you get some funds, but what is a very common misconception is that it's all funded by the European Union and you get this super many millions of euros and yeah. you can do whatever you want, but yeah. that is absolutely
it's not
true.
The case.
No, it's
okay.
not true.
So, actually, so some part of it financed by the EU and the other part is by the city?
Actually, it's almost all financed by however you divide it within the state. So usually the city, the region, and the national government are the main contributors.
Mm-hmm.
There is no funding from European Union except the Melina Mercuri Prize, which is 1.5 million euros, which you only get by in your year of the title, and only if you are doing good until then.
So, like,
so
good,
it's a
good
reward.
Luck.
It's not fine. It's not promised financing. It's exactly. a reward.
Yeah.
And 1.5 million euros, like generally, it's a lot of money, of course.
Yeah.
But in terms of the budget, it's not as much.
That's true.
Because average budget just for the program, the software part, mm. right? The program, the people, basically. Let's say for the institute, in that scale, it's in average, and in bigger cities, it can be more, but it's from 20 to 40 millions, basically.
That's a lot,
you know,
yeah.
like it depends on the size of the city. So 1.5, it's great, but it's not going to save you, you know. So you are completely dependent on the national, city, regional funding, which is not ideal, to be fair, because, you know, it's supposed to be a European project and then you need to defend it on the national scale always.
Exactly. So did you need to deal with the financial aspect also, or you're just working with creating the project and so on? Because I guess it's tough, right?
It is.
Yeah,
it honestly is, because, you know, you hit elections and everything changes, you know, so you have public procurement rules with the public money. And it's just basically, honestly, it is really, really, really tough. And again, it's different for every country, even though rules of public procurement are relevant in every country of European Union, still. It's not equal because the interpretation of the law is different everywhere. And we have a very strict one. And for example, we were supposed to write the bid book in a way that is as concrete as possible. You know, like you have all of the organizations confirmed and all of the artists confirmed.
Yeah, exactly.
You have everything planned to as much details as possible. And then you figure after you win that is actually in conflict with public procurement legislation. Because you are not supposed to pick the you know,
exactly,
people
like
who are going to be paid before, you know? So, oh my Lord, like we spent 2 years trying to solve this and we actually had to pass a new law in the government.
You're kidding.
Yes.
Oh, wow.
I'm not kidding. It's called in translation, it's like Law ECOC, which is like the shortcut of European Capital of Culture, and it basically allows us to contract some of the people from the bid book who directly contributed their ideas to the win of this title, so they can actually do it. But even this law doesn't solve all of the problems. You know, it solves like 50% of the problems only. So we still have a lot to deal with. But honestly, we had to, you know, go through all the parliament and everything. Basically lobby for the new law. So instead of me thinking of who's gonna sing or I don't know, paint or whatever, You know, we were lobbying in the government.
Oh, that's so tough. So, but that's amazing. Like, you created this change in the system as well, you know?
For now.
But when you tell that this is the European, like the cultural city and so on, how does people get it? Like, let's see, the people in charge or responsible for financing, they say, oh wow, this is amazing, or they say, ah, no, culture is not on our prior list.
Unfortunately, the second case, but generally, it's not only about our project, but culture is generally not and never was on the priority list of Slovakia. And once we, the unfortunate thing was that once we won, there was no set conditions that we could just follow and implement. We had to create those conditions, which was a setback, you know, within the plan, because we thought, honestly, it was naive now when I look back at it, but I really thought it's such a big deal that if we win, but not just like as a strange, like whichever city won, you know, like it's going to be such a big deal that everybody's going to respect it. And like, you know, we will just like go and do the things and it's going to be incredible. And of course there are going to be issues and so on, but honestly, it took us 2 years after the win to sign the contract with the Ministry of Culture. So which should have been the first month, ideally. Like,
but also the other link on the other side of this story is that now you're creating this infrastructure for the future. You know, like let's say if people coming in 50 years or 20 years, you already established this now, like the country, the system, kind of familiar with this cultural institute and activity. So like a kind of you're showing the way as well.
We hope so, but it's just, honestly, it's hard because, you know why? Because nobody in Slovakia knew what European Capital of Culture was or is, you know? It was here only once, as I told you, in 2013. Yeah. And also, unfortunately, west and east of Slovakia are not particularly greatly connected. Okay. I don't only mean by transport ways, but mentally and generally, you know, like what's going on here and there. So a lot of people didn't even know that this was happening, you know? And so they don't know what it means. So basically we always need to go back to basics to explain why this is important, what can it bring us, or why it is strategic and so on and so on. So nobody takes us as an institution necessarily because we are only nonprofit that was founded 2 years ago.
Okay,
we have zero history, you know, basically.
I understand you.
And people don't understand the history of European Capital of Culture. I don't mean none of the people, but generally, you know,
it's a new thing.
Very well known as a concept here. So the respect that I expected that the title would gather, it was not necessarily there, which made the situation more difficult.
You have two more years to build and to inspire people about what is it. And we are in talking about like challenges, like the financial aspect is a big challenge. Tell me more like about the two big challenges that you're facing, because I know like it's of course it sounds fun and all these projects and creative and so on, but behind the scenes there's a lot of work and challenges. So tell us what are the two more challenges that you have?
Well, the first one that comes to mind is that we are a small town and this project is big and requires a lot of professional capacities and it's hard to attract them to a small town, you know, and it's not exactly work that can be done remote all the way. And this is very site specific, you know, so we are struggling with recruitment. Honestly, you know, we need a lot of good people and we need them quickly and we need them experienced and we need them here. And that's a big jump, you know?
Okay.
Because Slovakia, well, it's not the only country, but it really is struggling with the brain drain, you know, like a lot of talented people going abroad, you know, especially like people. And yeah, we just, and yeah, so this is a big challenge, you know, how to secure the professional capacities to actually be able to implement this on a professional level when all of the people are going out.
Yeah. Do you, like, what are the tools to attract them? It's like salaries or working conditions, freedom in creating. What do you think?
Both all of the above that you mentioned, but then again we have some restrictions in those, because with public money we cannot afford we cannot really you know, give as competitive salaries we would like to, or as these people would deserve, because we have some restrictions on what kind of percentage we can spend on salaries and, you know, just basic providing of the organization, and what we have to spend on the content. So the same goes with the benefits, you know, with the public money is just so restricting. So we are exactly in this sort of conundrum, you know, like, and then like, what is the one card that we have still is that the project is attractive, you know, that it's a one in a time, like one of a kind of opportunity to be part of it. And that's what we are trying. This is the angle that we are trying to work basically.
Okay. This is what you play.
It doesn't work in all of the situation, because you know, life is tough and people need to provide for their families, they have their life set up elsewhere, and you ask them to uproot and move here.
Yeah.
And then again, the job is just for a couple of years. It's not for, I cannot promise for 10.
Exactly.
I can promise for 2.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
So,
You're more in touch with this community of art, artists and so on. What are like the things that attract them, let's say, in general? Of course, we don't have like a specific statistic and so on. But what does attract them?
The artists and the culture community?
Yeah, yeah.
To the project, do you mean?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like in general, like if you ask them, okay, like to move to the town, what usually they want or they ask?
Well, you know, the project that we wrote during the candidacy is very value-based.
Okay.
And if people relate to the values that the project is supposed to represent and relate to the quality that is trying to create, then that is something that kind of they feel like, oh, damn, it might not be ideal, but I sort of want to be part of it. You know, that goes both for possible employees or project managers that we have, or even the artists that we recruited along the way, you know, like it's just something that it feels right, you know, that we stand for what we stand for. I think like that's why I am here anyway, you know.
That's so nice. That's beautiful. And okay, so the financial aspect is a challenge. Talent attraction, it's a challenge. Do you have like a third big challenge that you have?
Yeah. I would say the legislation, which a little bit connects to the financial part, but in general, because the Slovakia, honestly, and it's not just Slovakia, because maybe I can even say that the countries of the former Eastern Bloc, they are just now ready for this sort of international crazy big project.
Okay.
And it's whenever we have this, because these cities that we hold the title, we have regular meetings, and you see the difference between people from Finland and Netherlands and from people from Czech Republic and Slovakia and Slovenia. Like, we have different struggles,
understand.
Like, we have different politics, we have different laws, we have different restrictions, we have different controls. And the legislation is just not flexible. It's just not ready. It doesn't honor the creative work that it in the way that it should have, you know, the public procurement approaches everything as a service, as this transaction, not as a creative process, or, you know, there's very little flexibility in that. So the legislation and which connects the bureaucracy, which is immense, crazy. And if you don't do it right, you get sanctions. You cannot pay those from the public money, which, you know, connects to financing again. So this entire legislation, administrative background, it's a lot to handle.
I have to say, for me, like, this legislation or this bureaucracy is so boring. And how do you deal with this kind of topics? Like, what is your trick?
Trick? I wish I had any, but there is no trick, honestly. It's just, and honestly, this is not even my area of expertise. So there are colleagues here who deal with it on a daily basis to much greater extent than I've ever had. Just like basically grinding, trying to make it work, you know, like trying to make it fit so we can do the creative work that we want.
Yeah.
But it's not easy. It's
I understand you. It's good to have a team members that can deal with this kind of aspects.
That is absolutely essential.
So financial, bureaucracy, and talent attraction are like these three, let's say, major challenges. And you're working on with your team, right?
Yeah.
what do you like? Because sometimes you feel like everything stops, you know, it's a barrier, it's a mountain, and you feel like, okay, this is hopeless. How do you cheer yourself up? Like, how do you find solution?
You know, honestly, I like to be looking for solutions. It's, you know, I like to challenge my brain. So
it's nice.
It's not that I like problems and issues, like I don't. But what I actually found, and not in all situations, like God, no, like absolutely not. Like, there were some really hopeless situations that I didn't want to be thinking of anything. But but sometimes when you are surrounded by like-minded people, when you're surrounded by the brains that you admire and brains that you connect with, it can be fun to just figure it out, because the goal is more important, and you figure it out because you are smart enough to figure it out somehow, or at least you figure out a way how to, you know?
Yeah.
And we had a lot of evenings that we stayed late and ordered pizza and drank wine and be figuring out solutions, you know, at the work. Unfigureable situations. And some we figured and some we didn't, but I would say just to be in sync with the brains that you work with the people that you work with would be the key.
Yeah. And I think it's how to say, it's important to choose your team, you know, the team members that can help you to find the solution.
Yeah, absolutely. And then, you know, what really brings me back in however the situation have gotten difficult along the way, and it have gotten very difficult along the way, is just the mission is greater. The project is just too big, and I have been told, and it's true, that I'm way too emotionally attached to it anyway. But you know, I was there from the day one. I gave birth to it, basically, or co-birth at least, you know. I'm incredibly emotionally, mentally, and intellectually invested in it. So it always comes stronger, you know, like whatever obstacle comes along the way. So far I've stayed.
Yeah.
And you know, I was trying to fight my way through.
Awesome. I also can sense it and see it now on the video. When you talk about it, I can see easily see that you're engaged and involved in it. So it's passion, it's part of your passion, which is beautiful to see. And Lenka, I'm thinking also to talk about the city's placemaking program.
Yes.
First, like, tell me, maybe give me and the listeners a highlight about the program. And I love to hear your experience.
Yes, of course. So in 2022, me and some of my colleagues, we attended Placemaking Week in Pontevedra in Spain.
Nice.
We had Placemaking Europe, who is organizing the Placemaking Week, is a partner in the BitBook, and we knew about the activities, and we really wanted to, like, you know, see the conference and see how this can help us and how we can contribute and so on.
Yeah.
And I became amazed by the placemaking agenda, really, because it's I love transversal things, you know, like things connect more and they create this consistent whole, but are able to engage a lot of elements.
Yeah.
And placemaking is that, because it engages art, it engages community, it engages architecture, it engages public space, it engages both public opinion, but also expert opinion. And, you know, it, like, just, yeah, like, all works together. So I was super happy. And it's scalable, because you can placemake on the giant scale, like when you're creating new neighborhood, you know, like with the developer. And also you can placemake with one bench in one park,
yeah,
you know, so, yeah, and everything in between. So just fell in love with it. And during this particular conference, there was this talk that I also had on this week in particular. I had a presentation, so we were a little bit more in touch with the organizers.
Yeah.
And there was this talk going on that they are going to put together a new network, Cities in Placemaking, and there is going to be this 2-year program in which several cities are going to be selected, and then they are going to be meeting and teaching and learning how to placemake, you know, what to do, you know, in a strategic manner and so on. And we didn't know much detail, but we just, like, jumped on it right away. Like, oh, how do we want to do it?
Yeah, yeah.
And and it was nice. So then we were basically, we were part of this sort of dinner when they presented a little bit of the program. Still nobody was selected, but, you know, like, we were trying to make cakes, you know, really well, that we should be the members and we really, really want to.
Yeah.
And then there was this nice coincidence that Pontevedra Week was in September 2022. Yeah. Yes, 22, as I said, yes. And then in January 23, me and my colleague and the mayor, and we went to Groningen, to Netherlands, to Eurosonic Festival.
Okay.
Our mayor went there because he's actually a member of one band. And this band is formed also with the director of the biggest festival of Trenčín Pohoda, which I've already mentioned.
Okay.
Anyway, I'm not going to go into detail there, but the point is that we find ourselves in Amsterdam on our way to Groningen with the mayor, and we took him to the meeting with STIPO, with the organization that organizes the Placemaking Week. And we basically, you know, made him enthusiastic about the whole network, and he immediately was like, oh, we need to be a member and everything. And so basically we also convinced the members of the placemaking, so we became one. So that's how we became the member.
Cool.
And we're thrilled to be included. And now more about the program. So far experience was fantastic. I really, really, really enjoyed it. We are meeting every couple of months, basically, and it's either in person or in hybrid. And there is now, I'm sorry, I hope I will not mess this up, but I think it's about 12 cities now that are in the network, and it's basically closed, sort of like the program was closed because it has its capacities, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And So it's for 2 years, and we learn about, you know, it's really great how these different cities have different experiences with the same problem. You know, to give you an example, it's basically like one of the workshops was called how to break silos within your organization, you know, so which is extremely relevant, like when you work, for example, in City Hall, which I don't, but it's close to us. And a lot of members actually do. We are actually kind of a special case there in the network that we are from Creative Institute and not from some kind of a City Hall-ish. More of an environment, because it has more a lot of architects, urbanists, and so on.
Yeah.
But we are actually the organization that's pushing this agenda, you know, on the City Hall. So. So it's incredibly insightful to hear about all of the experiences and all of the advices from not only the lecturers, but from the peers, you know, like from the cities themselves. And so far, it had been a great experience.
Nice. And do you have to do like some kind of homework, like to go back and do stuff in your city or no?
Not really. But the thing is that we do the homework voluntarily on our own, because basically every single town or city that is part of the network wants to go further with the placemaking agenda. So every city has different sort of project or strategy that they are kind of working on different scale. So we do the homework kind of anyway, you know, just because we want to implement the knowledge, not because it's assigned to us necessarily.
Yeah, so you find like talking to different cities is very valuable, and you're learning a lot to implement in your city as well.
Yes, absolutely. Plus, you know, the lectures, you know, are incredible, you know, and the entire program, I think it's very well structured. Also, I like the structure of how it changes, whether we meet in person or we meet in hybrid. And every single meeting is in a different town of the members, you know, and what is very, very cool. Actually, we are going to host this meeting in June, in June 24th. So
nice. So like next month.
So Trench is going to be the host of one of them. Yeah. And when you host, you get to take the members, you know, to different site visits, show them what you are working on, show them your own placemaking activities, get to meet the community or whatever, get to meet the City Hall members, you know, basically just get in touch with the entire thing.
Yeah. So you have been in different cities, and like June, you will welcome them to your city.
Yeah, that's awesome.
So maybe we can put this out so they listen and get just like an introduction about your city.
Well, they usually already have introduction, because it's the cities within the network, you know, so
they know.
They have some context, but absolutely.
That's awesome. So now you're planning the capital of culture and then a placemaking city program, no?
it's all connected, just one big cluster.
Yeah, that's true. And Lenka, tell me, like, why it's important to integrate placemaking into the cultural activities? Like, why?
Well, I think because of what I mentioned before, that's why I like placemaking, because European Capital of Culture is also a transversal project. It's an activity, it's a project that needs to look at so many different targets groups and so many different criteria, so many different city aspects. And placemaking does that. You know, placemaking is scalable. It's a great, great, great tool that can have great level of participation, but also great level of expertise. So it's a great tool for us, in particular for us, because as when I was building the program in the candidacy, as I already mentioned, that my background is in visual arts, but also kind of focused on art in public space. So the public space is an agenda that is close to my heart, and placemaking is just such a good gateway, you know, to all of it, and to engage the people and just to make places a little bit more alive, and therefore people are a little bit more open to different kinds of culture, you know, and it's just such a good stepping stone. And it offers you so many ways, exactly how to connect all of these aspects.
Yeah, so it helps.
So that's why I find it greatly important.
Yeah, and as you tell me, like a lot of the projects that you're planning has a lot to do with the placemaking or using the placemaking methodology.
Yes, and placemaking or working public space.
Yeah.
But basically the City Reimagine that I have already mentioned as one of the flagships. Right now, in June, when the placemakers are going to come here for the workshop and so on, we actually use that opportunity to create an event. We have this street very, very close to the main square, which is basically parking lots. And one of the placemaking techniques is to basically push out cars to make more public space for people to relax, to spend time.
Yeah.
So what we are going to do for one day is to push out all the cars and make like a little city festival, like a little city market on that street. And, you know, it takes, it's a lot of persuasion on all of the sides because there are a lot of cars on that street and imagine, all of them need to be gone for a significant amount of time. So this is like little, you know, like little ways how we are integrating placemaking techniques in the project, or we already use like what we have learned in the network is this like this place game. Basically, it's this very simple but very effective game to assess the place that you are at.
Yeah.
You know, you get this chart and there are questions and you can give it to people.
Yeah.
Passers-by or neighbors or whatever. And there are questions like, what are you miss in this spot? You know, like, what do you miss in this spot? What do you like in this spot? Like, what would you change? Would you like a particular activity? And so on. And they assess, you know, they need to think about it from a point of view that they maybe never have, because it's just a regular transit spot. And now they look at it like something could be happening here. You get data, you know, and
And
we use this game in project Every Part Counts, which is basically a project that is focused on transforming the neighborhoods into something that is more active, that is just not a city part with apartment buildings where people go to sleep and nothing happens.
Yeah, yeah.
But something that has its own, maybe even cultural identity or its own life. Because there are these blogs and like a little space, these cool places that could be used for different sorts of activities. Doesn't have to be anything particularly elevated. Can be picnics, can be little performances, whatever, you know, just gatherings, just fun. Can be a little party, a little screening. And this place game that we have learned in the network, we actually use for all the city parts in Trenčín.
Wow, that's like scaling up, no? The knowledge.
Yeah.
Awesome. Now I'm happy to see that you're enjoying that and learning a lot and seeing the value of placemaking. It's super cool.
Absolutely.
So tell me, like, what is next? What's going to happen, like, June to the end of this year, if we talk about 2024? So now in June you have the visits from the program. What else is going to happen during this year on your agenda?
Well, in terms of activities like for the public and events and so on, we also have that showcase festival that I have mentioned, you know, like for the young bands, the Garage Festival. We are also going to be active on the Pohoda Festival ourselves. We are going to have a little stage there, have a discussion and so on. And we are going to continue with this project Every Part Counts, with like a small activities in the neighborhoods to build up the audience based on the data that we have gathered. And we have great, and what is not so fun, we have great amount of administrative work. We are closing a lot of contracts this year. So
okay.
That takes more percentage of our work time than the activities that are visible outside, because we need to close a whole bunch of contracts based on the fact that we only closed the deal with the ministry by the end of last year. And now we need to, you know, prep everything so it can go big and crazy from 25 and 26 ongoing.
Awesome. So a lot of things going to happen.
Yeah, hopefully.
Will you be in Rotterdam for the placemaking week?
Yes.
Nice. Then maybe see you there.
Absolutely. I'm looking forward to it.
Yeah. So now I'm happy to hear about how you work, the process behind the scenes. Because we hopefully going to see all the projects that you mentioned. We're going to read about them as well. So it was really interesting and inspiring to see how you like create, solve the problem and hope more, you know, with the team to achieve your goal. So I'm happy that you share this with us. And as you know, the podcast is about two parts. Part one is the project and part two is about people behind the project. So it's going to be more about you, Linka. And I hope you're ready.
Sure.
Yeah.
Let's go.
So tell me, take us back in time and tell us more about Lenka. Tell us like where you grew up, how was your childhood, what you study, work with. Like, we want to know more about Lenka.
Okay. So I'm actually originally from Trenčín, where I'm now and where this project is based. I was about to say that when it was time for uni, I moved, but I skipped the entire childhood part.
You missed the main question.
I grew up here. I had just the, you know, I'm not even sure whether it's that interesting, you know, just the regular, nice, life, I would say. I had great mom, had great dad, you know, and I just loved them both. We had a good relationship. I was an only child for a long time. Mm-hmm. But then my parents divorced and my dad got married again, and he had two more children. So now I have one stepbrother and one stepsister.
Yeah.
And for the high school, I kind of always knew that I'm gonna do something creative.
Okay.
Like, it was like in my blood, like from the very beginning. So I was extremely my parents never even really tried to tell me what to do, you know. Like, I was not one of those kids that the parents ask, like, oh, you need to be a doctor or something, you know. Like, I was never the case in our family. Like, I was in charge of my own destiny.
Okay. And it's because they know that you love to be something working with creativity, or
plus I kind of like, if you would talk to people that know me, like, I have kind of, I have a personality that you don't necessarily fight me to if you don't have to, you know? So they just didn't question my decisions, basically, even though I was like five or something. So I guess I come out strong sometimes. But I was like always drawing, you know, it was just obvious. Like, I was just picking up all of these different creative endeavors, and especially drawing and visual arts was just something that I was like always good at, let's say, you know, I was told. I already went to high school that was art based. We have actually one here in Trenčín, like the secondary school of art. So I actually studied fashion design there, but I already knew that I didn't want to do fashion design, but
why not?
I just already knew it's too specific.
Mm.
And I just knew that I want to get in the artistic field.
Okay.
And I was closest to fashion design at that age, because, you know, like, you choose the high school when you're like 13, you know, like,
yeah.
it's, you know, it's quite early.
Yeah, right.
Your path of life.
Yeah.
But I always knew, like, I knew, like, this is, like, some of, like, passage, mm. and then I'm going to move to something a little bit more open. Mm. And as I was studying on high school, I didn't necessarily enjoy the... there were professors that I loved, and there were professors that I just couldn't stand. And mostly because I really... I love the authority that I can respect. And I cannot stand authority that is just playing, being authority because, you know, that is forceful. Yeah. So, but those professors that were true authority, those I loved and those inspired me. So and I loved history of art. I just loved it because it was transversal. You could see society reflected in it. And, you know, I just dived into it. And, when I applied to uni, I actually went to intermedia and multimedia arts, which was as wide as I could find.
Yeah.
And
where in which city was it?
Accepted. Sorry?
In which city was it?
This was in Bratislava, in the capital of Slovakia. It was Academy of Fine Arts and Design in Bratislava.
Yeah.
And I got accepted to this studio of Ilona Nemeth, which I already mentioned, it's as my former professor.
Yeah,
she was
yeah.
the first person I called. And she is just absolutely amazing. Like, she goddess. And she wouldn't like me to call her that, but she's like, you know, one of my main sources of inspiration, and she's my great role model. So I was incredibly lucky to study under her supervision. So those really were my formative years. And during college, I went abroad. I studied in Spain and I studied in Portugal.
Nice.
I learned the languages there, actually, you know, found a lot of new connections and friends and so on. Then I returned to finish my studies with Ilona. So that was in 2016 that I graduated. Yeah.
Okay, nice. And then you start to work in the same city?
A sad thing, incredibly sad thing, tragic thing happened because my father passed very unexpectedly. Mm. I actually wanted to move back to Portugal. I had a relationship there at the time. And I always kind of had a plan to go to live abroad.
Yeah.
I had money saved for it and everything, but then my family needed me, so I came back. He was sick at first and he passed.
Mm.
And as I told you, he had two small children.
Yeah, yeah.
So that was difficult. And, you know, I was just there for the family for long months and also healing myself because I really incredibly loved him and we had very special relationships. So it was incredibly painful for me as well.
Yeah.
But it brought me back. It brought me back to Trenčín. And eventually after several painful months, I really, really needed something to focus on, something to do except family work.
Yeah.
And I actually started a company then with one friend of mine, because when I was grieving, what helped me a lot, and I used to love it as a child, was puzzling. But once I was an adult and artistically educated adult, nonetheless, I just couldn't stand the tacky motifs that you find on the puzzle pictures, you know, the Eiffel Tower and the horses or whatever, the meadows and stuff. So I wanted to puzzle, but I wanted to puzzle something that I actually, you know, like to look at after when it's done. So we actually started a company that was founded by our own money, and I contributed those that I had saved for the life abroad that I never actually got to start. And we started to working with illustrators and graphic designers and created, you know, graphic motifs, like cool pictures that you can print on puzzle.
Mm.
And since the pictures were good, we also created the system where you can frame it without gluing it. you know, so you just kind of lock in the frame. Just like figure this frame, you can like lock it inside, and you don't have to glue it, so we can then unlock it, disassemble it, and like play again or change the picture in the frame.
Creative.
And I lived by this for a couple of years, you know, like we were building the company slowly, and it was amazing learning experience. I just loved it. I gave it everything. And then the company was already kind of like that it can survive if I will be a little bit abroad and, you know, like back and forth. And that was by the beginning of 2020. And then the corona hit, and it's, you know, it landed me back here. So I was like, oh my, I'm never getting out.
And it's, first of all, God bless your father soul. And my huge respect to you, like staying with the family, taking care of them. It's a big thing. So great, great that you did. And I think with everything comes, it's like it's about destiny. And you see, like you're here forming the future of your city.
Yeah, that was exactly it. Like I was, and then 2020, you know, the corona hit, then my abroad plans fell through. But then, like in several weeks, this project started, and I was here for it. And, and then you know, I was exactly thinking, and I said it several times, like throughout the years, like, okay, like maybe the, you know, the universe is just like throwing me back here.
Of course, so yeah.
This moment.
Yeah.
Where? I felt it at the time.
Yeah. You're the one. Tell me where you want, like when you talk about abroad, where do you want to go? Do you have something in mind?
Well, I was stuck in Portugal for quite a while, but I actually love that country, regardless of the fact that the relationship that I had there, it had its complications, especially with the business of the projects and everything.
Yeah.
But you know, I'm rather open-minded about where to go, like. Throughout Europe, I was for a long time, I was stuck on the south of Europe, you know, Spain, Portugal.
Yeah.
But now, you know, especially thanks to all of the placemaking knowledge, I kind of fell for Netherlands as well, and you know, and Denmark, and just recently we actually have been to Ireland on one of the meetings because Cork. Irish cities is the, and I was just surprised, like, oh my, like,
yeah,
this kind of looks like Northern Porto or something, you know, like it was, so yeah, it's just
interesting.
I'm kind of open to what happens, and now I'm not as stuck on choosing the city where I want to live but choosing the activity that I want to do there, you know? So whatever is coming next after this, it probably will be locked with something meaningful that I want to do there. So
exactly.
Yeah.
It's let's see what is your destiny hiding for you. It's going to be interesting to see your location 2027 after that. The capital.
Yeah, I'm curious myself.
But this is like a soft move to our next question. And it's about, like, what gives you energy and motivates you to do what you do, Lenka? What keeps you shining?
Well, I'm not sure whether I'm shining every day. Honestly, probably not. My colleagues would probably tell you that I'm not exactly a ray of sunshine all the time.
Not when you work with admin and bureaucracy.
Yeah, but thank you for that assumption in a way. I appreciate it. Well, honestly, for the longest time, and I think I already mentioned this, is just was that in particular, when it comes to this project, but not only, it's the mission, you know?
Okay.
Because when my father passed and I was in this period of in between, because I graduated and I thought I'm going to move. So I wasn't studying anything here. So then I actually found myself here, like without anything to do, you know?
Yeah.
And that was a big reflection time for me for many reasons. Mm. And I also wanted to move a little bit. I felt that I wanted to move a little bit away from being an artist per se.
Okay.
But to do, you know, and then I founded the company. I wanted to do something that, like, something wider.
Mm.
And I needed to find within myself, like, what it is that I want to do. And then I figured that it's the wrong question. That it's not what you want to do, but the question that I found right was, what value do you want to contribute to in the world?
Mm.
And then it doesn't really matter what sort of exactly your job description is, as long as you feel that you are contributing to that particular value, right?
So it's more about why you want to do.
Yeah.
And then the how.
Through the skills that you have, you know, like.
Yeah, of course.
And I have a particular set of skills.
Yeah.
I'm not going to cheat that. I'm never going to become IT engineer, you know? So.
Yeah.
Like what I have is what I have.
Exactly.
Of course I can enhance it, but, you know, let's.
This is you.
Stay grounded. And what I figured then was, I still remember the thinking session that I've had there was, because what I would really, really want is a world that is more open-minded, that is more curious, and that is more just and more equal.
Okay.
More smart, more empathetic. Mm. And then when we were actually, when I started that puzzle company, you know, like it still had a lot of in that, because actually doing puzzle, you know, like it relaxes your brain, you know, like it has so many different sorts of benefits to your brain, to how you then might behave to your, you know, to your environment and so on, and how you think about things, and how it sparks this different hemisphere.
True.
And then you're able to think differently about different things. And then the open mindedness about art and so on. Mm. So basically, I thought that I don't have to be an artist only to open up these topics. I can do whatever. I can be cultural manager now, which I am now.
Yeah, right.
Or whatever else in the future, activist, a teacher, I don't know what, as long as I do something that feels that it makes sense to me.
Mm.
So sorry, to answer your question, what keeps me going is that just to see whether I'm still on the mission. You know, whether I'm doing the work, whether it feels that it still makes sense what I do, whether it's still
exactly
there.
Creating a value and interesting. And so your journey about finding these values was, of course, is it like during your life, but mostly when your dad passed, and then you start to reflect and see, okay, it doesn't matter exactly what the job, but mostly about that I should fulfill these values and contribute to these values, the beliefs.
Yeah, the fact that he passed was, I just like broke my life in half, you know, and it felt, everything felt aimless and hopeless, you know, for a long time.
Mm.
So it just makes you go back to the basic, goes back to the beginning, because then you have to find something in which you find joy again, you know?
Yeah.
And you need to figure out how, like, where the joy lies, you know, like what brings it. And it needs to be something with meaning. If main joy for you is to use your brains, you know, for something that makes sense.
Yeah.
So, I just love to be introspective, you know, like that's my chance. So,
And okay. So let me see where you answer here. If you choose to work in another profession that not really linked to what you, not placemaking, not art, not visual art, not management, what profession you want to try? And
well, if I would choose a different field, I think I would do something with equity and equality. Maybe I would go into policy.
Hmm?
policymaking,
yes.
You know, some strategic documents making that do influence how different minorities are accepted in the general sphere. And maybe because I could actually use, I'm not sure whether in this universe that you are asking me, I can use the experience that I already have or not. I'm not sure. The thing is that this project also taught me how the levels kind of work. Like there is the level of the city, there is the level of the region, there is the level of the nation, and the layers in between, and there is the commission, and there is to see where you need to go to influence something so it can change, and who you need to talk to, and what kind of project do you need to write about it. And I am very, very, very much into gender equality, and I'm, and especially in countries like Slovakia, it's incredibly important to remind people that the fact that you are a young woman doesn't mean that you are incompetent. It doesn't mean that you need a white man in middle age that is only one who can say something in the meeting. So this is sort of like a byproduct of me trying to hold an executive role,
it's actually possible. You have the skills, you have the tools, so maybe, who knows. So let's say 100 years from now, in the future, when people are going to read your name, what do you want them to read about you, to associate you with?
I would like to be remembered maybe as someone who is truly competent, really hardworking, just, and someone who contributed to great quality of culture and possibly improved at least slightly, maybe even just for one person, the quality of life in the environment where I was at.
That's beautiful. I assure you, you're doing a huge impact, like, of course, with your team and all of this, but it's interesting with how life putting you in the different situations. Now you're artistic director, creating a lot of infrastructure, powering communities, spreading this is the word of culture. So you're doing a huge impact. I'm happy for you. You're like now it's,
thank you so much,
happening a lot. No,
it's a teamwork though. But thank you so much.
Yes. So now we are in the last part of this episode, and it's about you giving messages. So first one is about you giving a message to yourself. So what is your message to Lenka?
Like the future one or the past one or just like the present one?
You decide, you and yourself.
Okay.
Like if you are standing in the front of a mirror.
Yeah.
What do you tell us?
Okay, I have two things that I need to constantly remind myself of.
Yeah.
One is short. Chill. And everything flows. Those are the two things, because I'm incredibly, I can be a little bit of control freak sometimes, I'm incredibly passionate and greatly responsible and all of those things. And I take things sometimes incredibly seriously. So sometimes I just need to chill, just calm it, it's not everything is the end of the world. And everything flows. Is just that basically like this too shall pass sort of a thing, when I feel like it's a really dark end of something, just like it's gonna flow, tomorrow's gonna get better, you're gonna get stronger, everything flows, just flow.
Yes. And did it work for you, like when you tell yourself this, you survive?
Yeah, you know what? Once I read this incredibly smart thing, I'm not sure where it was, but there was this question, like whenever something makes you mad or makes you sad or upsets you, you need to ask yourself a question. Is this going to be a problem in 5 hours? Ah. Is this going to be a problem in 5 days, in 5 weeks, 5 months, or 5 years?
Okay.
And that gives you so much perspective. And I just loved it. And then you know when you are you will be able to let it go or less.
Yeah.
You're like, okay, in 5 hours, yes, it's gonna be a problem. But in 5 weeks, maybe
It's like a good question to not be a drama queen, you know, like a calm down.
Yeah.
Yeah, right?
Yeah, and not to be a control freak as well.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
Not to, when you're a detail stickler, you know, like sometimes, like, and especially when you have a great amount of stuff on your plate, like sometimes you need to let things slide. It's just impossible to make everything perfect. When your perfection is like, this is the question, like, is it going to be a problem in 5 months?
Okay. Probably. Yeah, exactly. So. Yeah. And it's funny you mentioned it's not the end of the world. So,
yeah.
Awesome. So these are the messages to yourself. And the next question is about, you give 3 messages to our listeners.
Yeah, if I could borrow the one that I've just said about the question, like, it's just such a good one. When I was reading the question, I was thinking about it and I can't foretell it in the previous question, but I'm assuming that possibly a lot of the listeners, you know, might have the kind of intense job that I do or intense lives that I do, this made a great impact on my control freakness. I'm not saying that it cured it. I'm just saying that it's a good, like, perspective taker.
Mm.
You know, it really is. So maybe just give this perspective of 5 question chance, you know, like whenever you see an issue in front of yourself. And and you know, sometimes the answer, even to, is this going to be a problem in 5 years, sometimes the answer is yes, but at least you know what is the priority to actually be to solve. So that would be one. Second is maybe a little bit from a, maybe it's going to seem like it's from a different field, but we've gone through a lot of situations within our organization and just generally throughout this process. And I would actually want to ask whomever is listening to look around themselves and to see whether any of their colleague is suffering, because sometimes we can find ourselves in different sort of work environments. Not all of them are ideal. You know, sometimes there are toxic situations that for different people are on different spectrum of difficulty to deal with.
Mm.
And maybe that's a message that, even if you are handling things well, doesn't mean that other people are. And if there is any chance of real true teamwork and that kinship that is needed in these sort of endeavors that that we engage in, just look out for each other. So that'd be second. And the third, like, you know, to lighten up, check out the concert that is this week and go for it, you know, just get out there and make sure that even though it seems like you have absolutely zero time to attend an opening of an exhibition or go to a concert or check out a new play, just grab your favorite person, couple beers, and just do it chill.
So I learned a lot today in this episode, not only about like placemaking and process lead management, and so, but a lot about also like this life, like how you see life from different perspective. And I'm so grateful like you sharing this with us. I'm so happy that we talked.
Me too. It was absolutely lovely time spent. Thank you so much for this opportunity. I greatly appreciate it and I had a really great time.
Yeah, so Lenka, thank you so much. I wish you all the best luck working on the program, hosting the people from placemaking from the program. And can't wait to see you in Rotterdam.
Yeah, me too. See you there. And thank you again. Thank you so much.
Thank you.